And good morning. You are listening to People Rise Up on your non-commercial community radio station, KBOO, here in Portland, Oregon, USA. You're also listening to us online at kboo.fm. My name is Andrew Geller, and today we're going to be talking about, in the first half of the show, recent changes made to how organic food is defined at the federal level. And in the second half of the program today, we'll be speaking about what organic farmers and ranchers can and are doing to promote biodiversity conservation. My guests for the first half of the show today are the director of the Organic Consumers Association, Ronnie Cummins, and the interim executive director of Oregon Tilth, John Foster. Now, what we're talking about here today is fallout late in the congressional session that resulted in a modification of the 1990 Organic Food Production Act. And before I get to my guests and ask questions about this, I just want to set a little bit of context, and you guys feel free to mention something that I didn't get right if I don't get something right here, because I'm trying to condense many years of activity into about a minute. So in the late 90s, the United States Department of Agriculture said, we're going to federalize the organic standard so we have a clear, consistent rule across the entire U.S. It generated a record number of public comments. A rule was made, and that rule allowed, there were three different categories of organic. There's the 100% USDA, there's 95%, and then there's the 70% threshold. Each of those are given different labels, and there's different things allowed based on the category. 100% organic is pretty straightforward, but the 95 allowed some non-organic substances in there that were approved in a separate process, something, and put on something called the national list. A blueberry farmer in Maine was not happy about that and said the new organic rule violated the 1990 Organic Food Production Act, sued in January this year. He won, and the synthetic ingredients were declared not to be okay in organic foods. And then the Organic Trade Association, which I guess has been a longtime advocate of all things organic, has kind of, well, maybe modified their stance based on some of its new members or more recent members, and a rider was put through on the 2006 Agriculture Appropriation Bill that changed that whole synthetics angle, as well as a couple of other things, but it's really the synthetics that I'm interested in speaking about. So with that, I'm going to bring Ronnie Cummins here into the mix, director of the Organic Consumers Association. Welcome to our airwaves.
Good to be with you.
Now, you folks, as well as many other organic food advocates, have been working on this issue at least for a couple of years, as far as I've been able to tell. Tell us just briefly. First, did I get that summary right enough for the listener?
Yes, I mean, the court case you spoke about, the Arthur Harvey lawsuit, which the court ruled on last June, it would have continued to allow the use of synthetic substances in made with organic products, that is, those that were between 70 and 95%.
And there were only about 35 or 38 synthetics on the national list. And, you know, I took a look at them, and a lot of it's stuff like baking soda, baking powder, lecithin, which is a soy derivative kind of used in emulsifying things, xanthan gum, you know, things that we all think of as pretty typically benign.
Yeah, I mean, what the point of contention was first of all, organic standards have always been decided by consensus in the organic community from the beginning. I mean, those of us involved in the co-op movement or the consumer movement or the farming movement, you know, we've spent 35 years developing this alternative food and farming system, which is now involved into a multi-billion-dollar powerhouse and is becoming increasingly the dominant way of looking at the future of food and farming in this country, organics. So it's very important to the organic community that when we have changes in the standards, that we use the traditional consensus-building methods. And the Organic Trade Association, in this case, at the prodding of some of their larger members, in secret went to Congress with modifications to the federal standards. They did not share those with other members of the organic community. The only way we actually got a chance to look at what we dubbed the sneak attack was because some congressional staff members basically gave us the document and said, look, what is this? The Organic Trade Association says that the organic community is behind this. So the process was totally undemocratic. They hired some notorious public relations firms in Washington, D.C., like Covington and Burling, Lewis and Lesher. These are firms that represent companies like Monsanto and Philip Morris and Kraft and so on. And these are hardball players who get their way in a Republican-dominated Congress like what we've got today. And this is, from the standpoint of the organic community, this was a gross violation of trust. You don't play with the devil in order to get your way. So things started out on the wrong foot. The basic thing is that organic certification systems all over the world allow a limited number of synthetic substances to be used in organic production. For most of us in the organic community, it wasn't the fact that a few a few synthetic substances had been carefully reviewed by the National Organic Standards Board, our watchdog, over the last 10 years and approved 28 substances with 8 more to go on. The problem with this legislation is that it took away or diminished the review power of our traditional watchdog, the National Organic Standards Board, and instead put most of the power for reviewing synthetic substances in the hands of the White House-appointed U.S. Department of Agriculture. Now, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has the legal power over a lot of organic standards, but we've also had to fight them, in 3 major battles since 1997 when they first proposed federal rules for organics. So the organic community is quite familiar with the fact that USDA, left to themselves, tend to gravitate toward looser standards. I mean, what the big battle you mentioned when the standards first came into existence, the 280,000 letters, the USDA was preposterously proposing that genetic engineering, food irradiation, municipal sewage sludge, and other practices would be okay under the organic label. The community beat them back on that. We beat them back in 2003 when Congress had passed a sneak attack rider to the appropriations reconciliation bill that said you didn't have to use organic feed on an organic farm if it was too expensive. We beat them back on that. We beat them back in the summer of 2004 when the USDA arbitrarily said that certain previously prohibited pesticides and hormones and tainted animal feed would be allowed. Mobilization, we beat them back. This time, however, it was an inside job. It was a sneak attack, and it hit right at the heart of the organic community's review power via our watchdog, the National Organic Standards Board, to review all synthetic substances.
Okay, and we'll come back to the issue of the emergency procedure provision, but I want to bring John Foster into the conversation here. He is the interim executive director of Oregon Tilth. They are based down in Salem, and they are an independent USDA-approved organic certifier and have been for many, many years. They also put out a publication called In Good Tilth. Welcome to the program to you, John.
Thanks very much.
Now, I'm curious, you're the interim director there, so you got more of an administrative role, but you told me yesterday that you have a lot of experience actually doing inspections. You were a certifier. You do a lot of technical analysis and writing on these issues. And I'm curious to hear how it has been for Oregon Tilth as a certifier to now have 5 years or so experience dealing with these new federal standards. Has it made things easier? Is it been more difficult? Problems you have now that you didn't have previously? Just a general sense.
Let me just start with a little clarification that Oregon Tilth as a kind of an umbrella organization is a 501c3 nonprofit, and we operate actually multiple programs under that umbrella. Oregon Tilth Certified Organic is the certification program that is accredited by the USDA to operate and implement the National Organic Program. So our certification activities are just one aspect of what we do. And as an accredited certifier, we're pretty much bound by following the mandates of the NOP, or the National Organic Program, the staff, and by extension, certainly the USDA. So speaking in that position, it's had its ups and its downs, having a federalized program. But having been, I've been around organic industry for coming up on 15 or 16 years now, and so I've operated as an inspector, as a reviewer, and as an administrator in certification, both prior to NOP and post-NOP. It's nice to have one standard that all accredited certifiers are to adhere to. I still notice relatively minor inconsistencies and interpretations between certifiers, but by and large, just having one standard to go to has been a good thing. It's certainly been a good thing in getting more ground converted to organic management to fill the demand that primarily manufacturers have been able now to count on a consistent supply and reciprocity between certifiers, which was a tremendous problem prior to federalization. So I see it overall as a good thing, in large part because it's been successful in getting more land under conscientious organic management.
You're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO. My guests this morning are Ronnie Cummins, director of the Organic Consumers Association, and John Foster, interim director of Oregon Tilth. You can find out about those groups online, back in order, at www.organicconsumers.org and www.tilth.org, and that's T-I-L-T-H. The People Rise Up website, through kboo.fm, has links to them as well as all sorts of other resources connected to our conversation this morning about changes in the 1990 Organic Foods Production Act. As a rider, slipped into the conference committee bill after regular negotiations were completed in late October. And we're just discussing some aspects of those changes, primarily related to the expansion of opportunity for synthetic ingredients to be included in certified organic products. Now, coming back to you, Ronnie, you folks have a tremendously extensive website, web page related to this issue on your site. And I've gone back and forth between your site and the Organic Trade Association site, and they kind of seem to be saying different stuff. I've seen language that says, and I don't know that this is from your site, but I've seen language that says, you know, there's possibility of now up to 500 new synthetic ingredients that could be included. And I see the OTA site saying, and their director quoted in news articles saying, oh, nothing's actually going to change. Well, that immediately led me to go, well, then why did you need the rider if it doesn't change anything? So can you give us your perspective on what might happen with synthetics?
Yes, I mean, the USDA, starting in December of 2002, a mere 2 months after the final standards were put into force, issued a directive which shocked the National Organic Standards Board, our watchdog group, by saying that henceforth the National Organic Standards Board would only be reviewing synthetic ingredients as opposed to the much broader category of synthetic substances. And the National Organic Standards Board vehemently objected to this. the USDA didn't really have a clear response, and things sort of stayed in limbo until this federal court case that you mentioned earlier. So we consulted in June with the chair of the first chair of the National Organic Standards Board, Michael Sly, who was the chair when the first synthetic substances were allowed in organics. We also conferred with the then current chair of the National Organic Standards Board, Jim Riddle. Both Jim and Michael concurred, as did others in the organic community, that this legalistic slight rewording of the federal statutes was actually going to have a major impact, in the sense that if the National Organic Standards Board no longer had to review synthetic substances, or at least most of them, this would put the USDA secretary into a position to be able to respond to the hundreds and hundreds of requests from industry for synthetic ingredients. Part of the rider also was giving the USDA so-called emergency power to decide whether organic ingredients were commercially available or not, or whether there was a shortage and that permission could be given to food processors to use non-organic ingredients.
Now, the Organic Trade Association's page overview of the emergency procedures provision says that the emergency provision only applies to organic crops, not synthetic materials. It is limited to the minor ingredients.
Right, ingredients, yes.
Okay.
But the point is, you should have the National Organic Standards Board, and this is what they've said over and over again, reviewing these requests. We don't want a situation where Walmart steps up to the plate, as they're stepping up as we speak, puts in a gigantic order for a certain product from an organic company. The company says, oh, well, there's not that large of a quantity of this substance, of this ingredient, to meet your order. I'll call my buddy at the USDA and we'll get this fixed. When we have these temporary shortages of organic ingredients, the National Organic Standards Board, our watchdog, needs to be involved in this decision making. We've seen over and over again the White House appointees behave in a way that's arbitrary and out of sync with the organic tradition. I mean, the fact that their first proposals would have allowed genetic engineering, irradiation, sewage sludge, the fact that as recently as the summer of 2004, they were completely ignoring the NOSB and proposing that previously banned pesticides and hormones and tainted animal feed would be used. The fact that they were saying in the summer of 2004 that they were not going to monitor or police organic label claims on things like body care products, pet food, herbal supplements. I mean, we, the Organic Consumers Association, we had to sue the USDA to force them to say, oh, yes, I guess we will monitor and police organic label claims on body care and herbal supplements and animal feed.
Let me bring John back in here for a second. And just to clarify, I want it to be known that the process, the original proposal for the organic rules that you referenced, Ronnie, with the sewer sludge and the irradiation and the GE stuff, that was under Bill Clinton's Department of Agriculture originally, up until January of 2001, when George W. Bush assumed office.
Oh, yeah, it's been bipartisan, the behavior of the USDA in regard to organics.
Okay, but now, so, John, you've worked as a certifier. Any time as a certifier since the new organic rule?
Well, now, are you meaning, when you say certifier, do you mean inspector?
I suppose I do, yes.
Okay, there's a pretty big difference. Yeah, I've been...
Well, what I'm trying to get at is I'm curious if TILF has, say, for example, refused certification of something because of the alleged non-availability of an organic product. I'm curious if that's ever happened. Has it come up?
Oh, it comes up all the time.
Okay, so it's a somewhat common thing. So if the emergency exemption is granted, then it seems like a lot of things that... You know, I can't I can't lay judgment upon people's credibility in terms of when they say, oh, we can't find this organically. We'd love this emergency exemption so we don't have to, you know, destroy this product and can sell it as organic.
Mm-hmm.
So non-availability of organic products does happen all the time. This emergency provision seems like it could facilitate a large upsurge in products sold as organic without that full effort at getting all organic products.
Okay, well, first off, it doesn't apply to 100% organic products.
Correct.
It does not. No, commercial availability clause has never applied to products making a made-with claim. It only applies to the no more than 5% of non-organic ingredients in a product making an organic claim.
Okay, and the made-with category is that 70% threshold.
Correct. Okay. 70% organic ingredients, and where the principal display panel makes only a made-with organic corn, for example, in tortilla chips, something like that. So this commercial availability clause pertains really to one category of label claims, and then only up to 5% of the product formulation.
And that was the issue in the Harvey lawsuit. It didn't address the 100% or the 70% category. It was really just that 95.
Right. Now let's be clear, because one point of confusion I often see is that there's a migrating understanding and inappropriate bridging between the synthetics issue and the commercial availability issue. So we want to keep those very, very separate. The commercial availability issue has only to do with agricultural, non-organic ingredients in that 5% fraction of an organic product. Synthetics is another,
right.
It's a separate thing.
Right.
So,
synthetics, now my understanding is synthetics can include actual ingredients, stuff that's in the product you buy, but it also has to do with, and my understanding is this could be where a lot of the potential expansion would take place, is the issue of cleaning agents and other processing materials. I don't know what, you know, people, companies do with grains to keep stuff separate, or, I mean, I don't even know.
Let me get back to the, because you initially asked me about the commercial availability thing, and we do come across that often. It is incumbent on any certifier, not just us, but any accredited certifier, to make sure that there's documentation in place of each operator who is claiming that they can't find enough organic ingredients in that 5% fraction from appropriate sources to show that supply does not meet demand of a usable quality, quantity, or form is what the regulation specifies. So it's not just that, you know, someone calls up and says, oh, we can't find organic cinnamon.
Right.
We're just going to use conventional. It's not that easy, or it shouldn't be that easy. That's not how we certify anyway. We do require fairly substantial documentation to show that they've made those attempts and that they need to do that every year. The emergency exemption, at least what we've been informed of from the NOP staff, is that that exemption is meant to respond primarily to the, at least in the last 5 years, the dearth of organic items on a section of the rule that's 205.606, which is where agricultural non-organic ingredients need to be in order to be used in this 5% fraction. The organic community as a whole, certifiers, manufacturers, government regulators, none of them of us have held that line really firmly. And the third point really of the outcome of the Harvey lawsuit was to the First Circuit Court was very clear that we in fact haven't been, we as a community have not been operating in accordance with the regulation, and that we need to do that now. The rider did nothing to change that. So all we're doing now as an industry is beefing up our protocols to get a lot, and I mean hundreds, of non-organic agricultural items on 606 and make them eligible for the claim, lack of commercial availability. That's what we've been told is the primary utility of that emergency. It doesn't have anything that of the emergency clause that's built into that language now. That doesn't have anything to do, at least from our certifier's perspective, it doesn't have anything to do with the synthetics you reference. Primarily those that you talked about are under a broad category of food contact substances.
Yeah, and we're
and that's the policy that was referred to in December of 2002. I think there was previous reference made to that. Those are things that the FDA has said occur in such incidental qualities that they almost don't exist. And these are things like sanitizers in some cases. Primarily food contact substances are things like resins and adhesives that are used in food packaging, hand sanitizers that food manufacturer, you know, labor might use to sanitize their hands. The vast majority of those materials.
And we're going to actually just have to leave it right there. I'm sorry to interrupt you like that, but we're out of time for this segment. You've just been listening to John Foster. He's the interim executive director at Oregon Tilth. You can find out more about them online at www.tilth.org. That's T-I-L-T-H. And we've also been speaking with Ronnie Cummins, the director of the Organic Consumers Association, online at www.organicconsumers.org. Although this legislation has passed, it's going to take regulatory implementation, so that's going to take place during the first half of next year. Check out these folks' websites for more information, and we'll keep people posted on how this is going to be changing. Thank you very much to both of you for being on the program this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Pleasure to be here.
All right. Take care. And I'll be back in just a moment here with Joanne Baumgartner and Tim Franklin talking about how farmers, organic farmers and ranchers are promoting biodiversity.